You are listening to the cycling podcast at the Vuelta a España in association with Rafa, celebrating the sport and producing the finest cycling clothing since 2004.
Hello, I'm Lionel Burney and I'm with Daniel Freeb.
Hello, Lionel.
Good evening, Daniel. What a beautiful evening it is here in Calpe, on the beach.
Not a bad spot, is it?
This is delightful.
Right. Been here before, Lionel? Training camps?
I have been to a training camp here before, yeah.
I'm not interested in your training camps. I mean, in the world of professional cycling, which we cover for a living, have you ever been here to interview riders?
I think I probably have, yeah. Maybe Amiga Pharma Quickstep at some point in the past. That rings a bell.
Just about 300 metres up there, I think they usually stay, overlooking the beach.
Yeah, but more importantly, I've been here for my own training camp also. Much more enjoyable. It is nice to cycle around here, particularly in the sort of late winter, early spring, when the weather's really nice and the roads are quiet. And it looked like a nice day out today. Lots of cyclists riding on the time trial course, which I drove sort of lunchtime-ish before. A few riders were actually wrecking the course at the time. The police weren't terribly happy that I was on the course, I don't think. They kept trying to stop me, but I wasn't doing anything wrong. I was just checking out the course myself. Surprised by how twisty and tight it was, particularly in the final third. Really restricted to only half the width of the road. There was tape up down the middle, so they were using only one lane. And I thought, this could be interesting. Bearing in mind, Nairo Quintana, the red jersey wearer, crashed in a time trial in 2014 while wearing the red jersey. Not that I was wishing a crash on him at all, but I did think that maybe the technical aspect of the course might cause a bit of an upset. But stage 19 of the Vuelta a España from Javier to Calpe, 37 kilometre time trial, fairly humdrum really. The early leaders, among them Yves Lampaert, Tobias Ludvigsson of Giant, went 2 seconds quicker than Yves Lampaert. And then Jonathan Castroviejo of Movistar set the time to beat. He was a good 40 seconds quicker than Ludvigsson. And then it was all about the battle for the GC places. And the headline, of course, is that Chris Froome not only beat Castroviejo to win the stage, but he took back 2 minutes 16 from Nairo Quintana and now trails by just 1:21 going into the final mountain stage tomorrow. The other big movers and shakers in the time trial, Alberto Contador, as expected, climbed above Esteban Chavez quite convincingly and now looks set to take third place on the podium. A very good ride by Andrew Talansky, who's moved up to fifth for Cannondale Drapac, shunting Simon Yates down to sixth overall. And then the bottom half of the top ten, quite a lot of movement there because Samuel Sanchez of BMC crashed. He looked to be the only significant faller. I don't know whether other riders crashed as well, but he looked like he'd come off pretty badly. He's had sand on both shoulders and his skin suit was ripped, and he's tumbled out of the top 10 from 7th down to 12th, meaning that Scarponi, Danny Moreno, David de la Cruz all shuffle up a bit. And so we'll talk about whether Chris Froome gained the sort of time we were expecting, but certainly he has kept the Vuelta alive. At 3:37 back this morning, there was no chance of him unseating Quintana on the Alto Aitana tomorrow, but now at 1:21, it's going to be very, very difficult. But it's not dead in the water, is it, Daniel?
No, he's back in it. And you think back to, well, before the disaster that Team Sky had at Formigal, and we were talking about, for several days, we were talking about the kind of time gap that Nairo Quintana needed going into this time trial. People were talking about 2, 2.5, 3 minutes. Team Sky, and Dave Brailsford in particular, thought that 40 seconds would be more realistic, that Quintana could get within 40 seconds of Froome in this time trial. So he was some way off that, wasn't he, over 2 minutes. I think Froome must be delighted. I mean, he's back in it, effectively, particularly with a 21, 22-kilometre climb to act as the Vuelta's grand finale tomorrow. Not particularly steep climb, the kind of climb that might suit Froome, perhaps, and the kind of climb that would suit a big attack, really. So I think he'd be thrilled, 1 minute, 21 seconds down.
Yeah, you mentioned the stage to Formigal, the fiasco at Formigal for Team Sky, where Quintana beat Froome over the line by 2:37 and got a time bonus. And then, so Froome taking back 2:16, he's almost recovered every, you know, all of the deficit that he lost on that most surprising and definitive day of the Vuelta. The difficult thing to know is whether Quintana was just playing safe and making sure that he didn't lose hatfuls of time by misjudging a corner or pacing it badly. He was down very early on. Froome was really fighting very, very hard for every second on the descents. He was adopting his Col de Périssaud descending style, sitting on the top tube. He blew past Esteban Chavez very early on, and he was 46 seconds up at the 12.5 kilometre check, 133 up at 12 kilometres later, and you know, he was gaining time all the time. But we don't really know whether Quintana was just making sure he preserved a meaty enough advantage for tomorrow, or whether he was, you know, not going terribly well. What do you think?
Yeah, he seemed fairly laid back at the finish. I mean, yesterday he said that he hoped to only lose seconds and certainly not minutes to Froome. So he was some way off with that estimate or that hopeful prediction. But the finish today seemed pretty relaxed, almost relieved, I would say, because it wasn't great for him today, but it probably wasn't as bad as it could have been. Perhaps you're right, London. Perhaps he did try to ride it economically. I know the rest of the Movistar team certainly did. I mean, I spoke to Castroviejo at the finish, and he set a very good time, but he did say that he held something back. We had to think a little bit about tomorrow. But by the same token, the Sky Riders also held a little bit back. I mean, Pete Kenyuk said that he only really rode hard for about 10 kilometres, or he only, you know, took the handbrake off, to use Arsene Wenger's favourite expression, in the last 10 kilometres. So everyone is ready for this battle royale tomorrow, and everyone is also prepared for it to kick off early in the stage. You know, awful lot up for grabs tomorrow, from mountains jerseys to points jerseys to podium places, fifth place, and you know, we've seen the lengths that Michele Scarponi went to defend the ninth place. So there could be teams drilling it tomorrow morning to try and preserve their riders' 11th place on general classification.
Yeah, must have been tough for Castroviejo, because he's a very good time trialist. He missed out on the bronze medal at the Olympic Games in Rio last month by a handful of seconds to Froome. Froome obviously finished third and won the bronze. Castroviejo was fourth for Spain, and if he did hold something back, I mean, he was pretty well beaten by Froome today, but he could still have been in the mix. It does show that Movistar are getting everything sorted for the final day, and when you put the two teams together, Movistar and Sky, surely Movistar have got more in the locker than Sky, haven't they? They look a lot better equipped for a day which has got a number of second category climbers first before the Aitana at the end.
You would think so, Lionel, but how do you think they'll ride tomorrow, Movistar? I mean, we're accustomed now, or we have been accustomed in this welter, to see Movistar on the front and basically doing what Sky have done in the Tour the last few years. But tomorrow, you would think it might be a bit different, but do Sky have the firepower to really drill it all the way? I mean, or certainly most of the way over the first Category 2 climbs and then onto the Aitana? I'm not sure.
Well, Froome would need Quintana to fall asleep the way he did it on the stage that set out from wherever it was that went up to Formigal that morning, and I can't really see that happening. I mean, there's so close to the end now with really 4.5 hours of concentration left for Quintana. You can't really imagine him making such a fundamental mistake while he's, you know, he's there in the red jersey, all eyes are on him, he knows exactly what he's got to do, and he has got that kind of that cool blood. That's, I don't know what Spanish for sang froid is.
Sangre frío.
There we are, sangre frío. He looks like he's got it under control and looks like he should get his second Grand Tour victory.
He does, but you know, I asked for him tonight whether he was going to do what he said he would do earlier in the week. He said that he would wait and see and really assess his rival's condition as he went along over the last few stages, and if there was an opportunity, then seize it. I asked him tonight whether that was still the policy, and he said no. Now he's obviously in a position where he is going to gamble. He's close enough for it to be worthwhile. He has to. And also he's in the enviable position that I think Alberto Contador has been in for a long time, for a number of years now, and explains partly why Contador is such an aggressive rider, that second place in the Vuelta really doesn't mean an awful lot to Chris Froome at all. I mean, Chris Froome is building a palmarès that is not really going to be enriched by second place in the Vuelta. So he can go for broke, and I think he will go for broke, which is not to say it's going to work. I think it probably won't work, but who knows?
That's a very good point, because he may as well finish fourth or fifth for, you know, than do nothing and just roll in, watching Quintana all the way. He's got nothing to lose from trying something. It's just whether he he and Sky try something early on or whether they wait till the final climb. And it's been really hard to judge Chris Froome's climbing in this race because he's looked at times fragile and at times just as if he can do what he wants. The very, very steep finish the other day, he was yo-yoing off the back. He probably was struggling. But again, how much of that is him choosing to make his effort when the gradient suits his own style best? But then on the day to Formigal, when he really had it all to do and was left to chase pretty much on his own, he rode for a few kilometres but then blew, and then it was damage limitation on the way to the top. So it's the end of a very, very long summer for him. All the build-up to the Tour de France, then trying to maintain that peak for the Olympic time trial, and now the Vuelta, three tough weeks, three hot weeks of racing. And in his press conference afterwards, he did make the point that tomorrow is basically his last serious race of the year, and there must be a bit of an end-of-term feeling for him. So maybe not just about the legs, but how much did he really want it, and how much did he really believe that he might be able to put Quintana into trouble?
You know, we can sort of speculate as well about what would it take for Froome tomorrow. You know, how late can he leave it? How much distance does he need? How many kilometres does he need from the top of the Aitana to gain 1:20, but assuming that Nairo Quintana is not going to bonk spectacularly, and you would have to think that it's going to be at least 2 or 3 kilometres out, even if he leaves it very late. But he might find a valuable ally in Esteban Chavez, because he's a similar distance from Alberto Contador now. Contador's now in third place, so Contador will be Chavez's hair and Quintana will be Froome's hair, and you know, maybe they could do something together. This is all very theoretical, but it is going to take a bit of a miracle.
I also think that one of the big contributing factors is whether the stage win is also up for grabs for those GC riders. If you were Movistar, it would be in your interest to let a break go and then let the stage play out amongst those guys, and then that reduces the incentive for the likes of Contador, or you know, even Simon Yates perhaps, or even Andrew Talansky, who's really, we'll talk about him in the second part, but really done very little, and is riding to an impressive, albeit very quiet, fifth place. If there's still a stage victory up for grabs and you get Contador firing off to try and win a stage, because he hasn't got a stage win in this race yet, then that changes the dynamic of the riding in that front group completely, because others will be tempted to follow, and then it does have a bearing. Would you agree?
Or well,
would you...
not least because of bonus seconds, no?
Of course, yeah, absolutely. So it's in Froome's interest for the front of the race to be the GC race, so that some of the others are lured out to play, and yeah, the bonus seconds, they might be critical, you never know.
And Lionel, you mentioned Talansky. Can I coin an adjective?
You can.
It's been a Zubeldirian ride by Talansky, hasn't it?
Eurosport, the home of cycling.
Well, Daniel, I don't know about you, and it's not been a summer holiday. Let's make bones about that. Covering a Grand Tour, even if the weather is lovely,
it's brutal.
It's been a tough week. It's been a tough week. I feel like Richard got the better end of the deal. I think he saw slightly more attractive parts of Spain, and certainly the logistics seemed to be a little bit easier for him. We travelled quite a long way in my week here from Bilbao, right in the north of the Basque Country, all the way down here to the sort of eastern, southeastern coast. And it's been very, very hot, hasn't it? It's taken its toll, I think, on the riders, the heat and the aggressive racing. But, Daniel, the last mountain stage before the procession into Madrid on Sunday, the last mountain stage goes to the Aitana. Tell me a little bit about it. I remember it's been in the Vuelta before, but I've not actually been there. So what's it like? What can we expect?
The Aitana, it's a very barren part of southeast Spain. Kind of, you know, we talked yesterday about the Vuelta of the 90s, these sort of barren sierras and wide roads. And the Aitana, for me, it's kind of synonymous with that sort of Vuelta. It was featured four times in the Vuelta, actually in quite recent times. Klaus Müller won there. Leonardo Piepoli won there. Damiano Cunego won there. It's long at 22 kilometres. It can be windy. It's pretty open. It's not particularly steep. There is 1 kilometre where the average gradient is about 9 or 10%. But generally, it's pretty steady, sort of 6, 7%. It's the kind of climb where you can work up a fair amount of speed.
So it's a racing climb.
It's a racing climb. Mm.
You mentioned the wind there, Daniel. It's very windy today. It's quite cross-head windy in from the coast here, wasn't it, for the riders as they came down the time trial route. do you expect if the wind's blowing tomorrow, that's another little factor, isn't it, that teams might exploit? There might, yeah, you just never know, do you, I suppose?
Could be. They will not want a headwind. Well, Chris Froome will not want a headwind, that's for sure, on the Aitana, because that would not favour attacking riding. Mm. It could be a factor. Also, talk of storms up there tomorrow, and if a storm breaks, then, you know, the wind can do all sorts and it might wreak havoc.
And so, in realistic terms, we don't expect Chris Froome to win the Vuelta, but he's made a really good fight of it. And without dwelling once again on the fiasco of Formigal, that really has been the defining day of the race, hasn't it? And you have to take your hat off to Quintana and Contador as well for really exploiting that to the full and turning the knife when they had the opportunity to do so. It's exactly what we've been talking about. You know, the Tour de France lacks, in a way, is that ability to just sort of switch overnight. And we saw it at the Giro, didn't we, with Stephen Crauswijk coming to grief against the ice wall and Esteban Chavez looking like he might win, and then Vincenzo Nibali's remarkable attack on the penultimate day. And this Vuelta has been, you know, it's, although Quintana's had a decent lead for almost a week, there's still been that question mark, and I will get that answered tomorrow. But it's been a great race, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's been a cracking race, very tight. It's really been the battle that we wanted, we hoped to see at the Tour de France, and Quintana's really proven that, you know, the doubts we had about his longevity as a Grand Tour rider after the Tour de France, we thought maybe we'd overestimated him, maybe he wasn't quite the, you know, this firecracker in the mountains and that we had thought he was. He's really dispelled those doubts that we had. You know, he's talked on a number of occasions at this Vuelta about the allergies he suffers during the Tour de France, and the pollen allergies, and he's talked about, you know, having learned during the Tour what it feels like to really ride a Grand Tour when your body is just not responding and can't do the things you want it to do. It's really set up the next 2 or 3 years of Grand Tours. You know, I talked yesterday about there being no one really appearing on the horizon, sort of 22, 23-year-old who looks as though they're going to challenge Froome and Quintana and, you know, the other two or three that are in and around that level. You know, perhaps it could be one of the Yates twins, but we certainly look set up for 2 or 3 more years of a great rivalry between Movistar and Sky and Quintana and Froome.
Whoever you are, wherever you ride, whatever the reason, Rafa exists to improve your ride with the finest kit, inspiring stories, and vibrant clubhouses and communities all over the world. See rafa.cc for more information.
So let's have a brief word about some of the other riders who are in the top 10 and who have a position to defend tomorrow or maybe in the hunt for a stage win. We talked yesterday or the day before about whether or not Esteban Chavez can step up and actually win a Giro or a Vuelta. I think a Tour de France might be a bit much of an ask for him, but whether a Giro or a Vuelta could be a realistic target. And of course, they could be a realistic target, but he's going to need a bit less critical time trialing kilometres, because today he slipped quite significantly. I mean, he was always vulnerable to Contador. He's only 5 seconds ahead this morning, but he's now, you know, a minute and 11 behind. Took a bit of a pasting from Contador today, and that's something that he would have to improve at if he's going to actually win, because there wasn't significant time trialing in the Giro, was
no.
there?
No, there wasn't. Neither the Giro nor the Vuelta this year featured that much time trialing, and you know, there is a bit of a trend in Grand Tours to limit ever more the number of kilometres against the clock, but I'm not sure he's going to have many more or many better opportunities than the Giro and the Vuelta this year, and I presume he will improve slightly against the clock, but he does have an awful lot of improving to do, doesn't he?
And it's a similar problem really for Simon Yates, who slipped away from his position 5th this morning, now 6th, and also his brother Adam. But together, if you could imagine, if they rode the Tour together next year, that's quite an enticing prospect. Or if they went into the same Grand Tour together, it'd be interesting to see whether Orica Bike Exchange see them as very much a tandem. Of course, this year it couldn't happen because Simon Yates was suspended for the Tour de France, but whether of those three, how they pick that team and who they put together and who they choose to lead, or next year do they give one the Giro, one the Tour, and one the Vuelta? I mean, that's an interesting question for them.
And what a tactic to be able to use, Lionel, to field the two twins together. No one knows who's attacking. No one knows which one it is.
Well, brilliant. Yeah, I made that joke once before about, you know, perhaps take them both along and get them to do alternative days. Save the legs, only do half the Tour. And see whether they could win it as a kind of on off the bike Madison effort. Just the others in the top 10, because Orica Bike Exchange aren't the only team that currently have two riders in the top 10. The other team that have two riders in the top 10 are Cannondale Drapac, almost called them Garmin there, nearly. The Garmin police would have been on me there. Andrew Talansky is fifth, and Davide Formolo has slipped a couple of places to 10th, but both decent if unspectacular performances. And Daniel, we were chatting over dinner about last night about Cannondale Drapac's obsession with kind of potential, or more to the point, Jonathan Vaughter's interest in potential rather than rock solid results that you can bank on. And it's been a really torrid year for them if you look just at results. They've had no World Tour wins at all. They've had really only a sprinkling of other wins. Although Jack Bauer did win a stage of the Tour of Britain yesterday. Fifth place is a very good result, though, for Talansky, isn't it? And it's going to pose that question again, and the expectation will be back on him, a bit like it always is with TJ Van Garderen, in that next year he can go to the Tour and lead Cannondale Drapac in the Tour de France. And then that's where all the trouble seems to start for some of these guys, isn't it?
Yeah, it really depends what the sponsor wants as well. I mean, they seem to be quite happy to, or they seem to really be sure that they want to develop their team from a general classification point of view, but there are people who will look at the team and think, well, the best case scenario is they finish fifth or sixth or seventh in a Grand Tour, and really is that, and does that punch much of a hole? Would they be better off signing a big name, sort of punchy sprinter type rider who is going to guarantee them 10 big wins a year or 10 wins a year? It's a tricky one. I mean, certainly from the point of view of the World Tour and the World Tour points, you know, having guys that finish in the top 10 in stage races is a great policy. You know, we've seen Dimension Data, how they've seemingly had quite a good season this year. Yet, if you look at the World Tour ranking system, they've been absolutely dreadful, which, you know, doesn't really correspond to the reality that we've seen. But, you know, our colleague Fran Reyes wrote a piece today, I think it was on one of the websites, which talks about how their Dimension Data's World Tour status is in serious peril now, because probably because they haven't really got enough firepower out in terms of general classification. So it's a tricky one. I think Cannondale are going to make some changes next year. Maybe a bit of an overhaul of the coaching. There'll be some new riders coming in. Hugh Carthy's coming in. He's really struggled on this Vuelta, which is only reasonable to, you know, it's a guy who's been running for Caja Rural and done well in small Spanish races, done extremely well. We thought he might take the Vuelta by storm. He hasn't, but he's got through, which is no mean feat for a 22-23-year-old.
Yeah, I mean, just on the World Tour, I'm sure we'll talk about this after the World Tour has finished, but there is a problem with the whole system, isn't there, when the wrong things seem to get rewarded. If you go and win a handful of Tour stages, as Dimension Data did, and then find yourself bottom of the table, that means the system doesn't work. Because in terms of publicity, in terms of, you know, the importance of the victories they've gained, they way outweigh, you know, some of the wins that teams that are ahead of them have got. So that probably needs to be looked at. But I mean, that's one of a whole number of problems to do with the calendar and the ranking systems and what is valued and valuable for teams, because they start having to make these strange decisions about recruitment. I mean, you look at Cannondale Drapac and think, you know, they've got these stage race potential, but it's bottom half of the top 10 kind of stage race potential, isn't it? And is that really enough for a team to build their entire season around? And particularly when you look at the licenses up for grabs, and Bahrain Merida are you know, adding firepower and points. I think I read today Enrico Gasparotto, who won Amstel Gold, is going to end up there as well with Vincenzo Nibali, so they'll be fine. It's a funny one. And then looking at the Vuelta itself, and you know, the riders that have finished well up there overall and have won stages, honours have been shared around quite a lot, haven't they? I mean, you look at the teams that have had a successful Vuelta. Etics Quickstep obviously won a clutch of stages. Orica Bike Edge have won three.
Orica Bike Edge?
Oh, yeah. Neil Stevens called them Orica Bike Edge in an interview we haven't played another day. And it's my Achilles heel. That I just can't shake it. They're Orica Bike Edge to me. But there we are. It's wrong on two levels.
You need to go home, Lionel. You need to go home.
I do. I've been sitting in the sun too much. I think that's the problem. Anyway, tomorrow's the big one. We will recap tomorrow's final mountain stage after it has finished, Daniel.
Watford, West Ham in it.
Yeah, I'm afraid. Yeah. Well, I'm going to be doing some podcast doping tomorrow because I am flying home tonight and I've got a date with the London Stadium, as they insist on calling
it. It's the press room. Is the Arsenal game going to be streamable from the press room, Lionel? That's what I want to know.
I did ask them and they looked nonplussed. They didn't know who this Arsenal was. Long time since they've really, you know, done anything to worry the Spaniards, isn't it? Anyway, this is not the football podcast, this is a cycling podcast. That's the end of my Vuelta sojourn. I've enjoyed it immensely. It's been a great experience. Hope to come back for more of it next year. So thank you very much for your company, Daniel.
Goodbye, Lionel. Adios.